Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm very delighted to interview Christian Chartier all the way from Montreal. And he is a medical student who's interested in doing really cutting edge research in artificial intelligence and plastic surgery. So welcome, Christian.
Good to meet you, Dr. K. Thank you so much for having me on.
Good to meet you virtually. As we go into this AI world, it's all becoming virtual relationships and virtual connections. And we connected online. Actually, I saw you on Clubhouse, one of the most interesting places, and on Instagram. Tell me a little bit about yourself. So for everybody listening, this is a third year medical student. And that makes you all of how old?
20. That makes me 24. So I did a bit of a fast track, but 24 years old. Yeah.
That is amazing. So you're in med school. Where do you go to school?
I go to school at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. So in the Great White North for all the Americans out there.
Excellent. And what made you interested in being a doctor?
I found that it provided me with a good balance of, you know, helping people, but also being able to participate in game-changing research. The MD title confers you with, you know, authority when it comes to research, authority when it comes to helping people. And I thought that was a balance that I don't think I'd be able to find anywhere else.
And tell me a little bit about what brought you into this idea of artificial intelligence and plastic surgery specifically. Like, we use a lot of robotic surgery these days. In my specialty in head and neck surgery, I use computer guided navigation surgery for difficult areas of the face, the sinuses, the skull base. What brought you into this realm?
So, you know, as you know, when you begin medical school and you're interested in, you know, surgical specialty, but a competitive surgical specialty, the research profile is extremely important and you need to show that you're productive, you know, as of day one. And what made me kind of uncomfortable was the idea of publishing on a topic so early on that I wasn't, you know, necessarily an expert in. So I began searching for a way I could strike a balance between meaningful research, but also providing some sort of expertise. So, you know, AI really fit that balance. And I think that it's a very, you know, trendy and important topic that, you know, we could work a little bit more on in healthcare and in surgery.
So you started as a research endeavor. Are you planning to come to the United States after you do your training in Montreal? Like for your residency and surgery?
Yeah, so I'm just kind of coming. Yeah, so I just finished up a research year at the Mass General Hospital in Boston. So I took a year out between my second and third years of medical school to do research in this space in Boston. You know, it was a really exciting year. I got to know a lot of folks who will be lifelong friends. So the plan is certainly to you know, consider the U.S. as a long-term. I've lived out in San Francisco and New York as well, and real positive experiences. So they're definitely on the radar.
So let's get right to it. How are we going to use artificial intelligence specifically in plastic surgery? Because I have all these ideas that I think one day we should be able to scan and map the young face, scan and map an older face, and track what fat pads are aging over time, and be able to really carefully and volumetrically replace aging facial fat, and all kinds of cool ideas like that. What do you think is going to happen? What's the future?
So, I mean, now that you mention it, you know, now that you mention it, it'll be very important to have folks like you buying into these types of technologies, because, you know, as much as AI is a glamorous topic and we think of these complex algorithms that, you know, smarter people than I are able to develop, the real challenge of implementing AI in a new space is collecting good data. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the algorithms that we end up using are pre-made by, you know, folks at Google, folks at all these world-class institutions. But in order to deploy them in our space, we have to be equipped with good data. And what I found as a medical student is the focus should be on finding ways of not stepping on people's toes while collecting good data in the operating room. So that's the main challenge today.
Mm-hmm. What kind of exact imaging is happening with AI when you scan the human face? Do you have some ideas of what people are capable of doing?
So as far as, you know, the state of the art today, I think a lot of the imaging we're using is standard MRI and CT, mainly because those are available in, you know, in an abundance. We've got access to plenty of these, especially at leading centers. What's new is we're now finding that the iPhone camera itself has really wonderful capabilities in terms of, you know, mapping the evolution of a face over time. We've only had the iPhone now for maybe 10 years, but, you know, once folks grow old with the iPhone, I think we'll have a, you know, a really useful tool and an affordable tool that won't require any kind of in-depth CT or MRI.
What's the project that you're currently working on regarding body image and perhaps how dysmorphias are occurring, how people interpret their body and their faces excessively, you know, warped and aged because of imaging?
So I've listened to quite a few of your podcasts, and that theme comes up a lot. You know, how do we protect young people and, you know, protect everybody, specifically young people and young girls, from the, you know, the issues that come from body image and issues of body dysmorphia? And one of the tools that we've been prototyping now is an algorithm that can actually detect the use of certain Photoshop and Facetune tools in facial images. Mm. So, you know, I'm thinking Instagram, I'm thinking peer-reviewed journals, where a surprising number of folks may be presenting surgical results that are not necessarily their own or not necessarily realistic. And that has, you know, these types of trends have made plastic surgery and facial plastic surgery kind of a scapegoat in this fight against mental health and or the fight against body dysmorphia and the new trend of disseminating information about mental health, when I think it should not be. Plastic surgery is a real beautiful field and a useful, noble field. But, you know, if we can do our part to kind of intervene where there's dishonesty, I'm happy to contribute.
That'll be game changing. I think definitely some aspects of Instagram are giving us a bad name because, yes, people Photoshop their results when they post to Instagram, and girls Facetune their beauty daily, on the daily, every day. Everybody loves a good filter, including myself. But it's so important for us to show up authentically also, so women don't interpret all these, you know, they don't interpret the aging process as so damaging and they don't criticize their own features so aggressively. So I think that would be awesome if we had a law or a rule or regulatory thing that had to actually label each photo as face, this photo has been adjusted, this photo has been face tuned, like some kind of little stamp, you know, like how Instagram now, if you say the word COVID, pops up a link to an actual COVID factual site. It ought to be like, you know, this is not a real image, you know, some kind of asterisk goes along with it.
The idea, I guess the idea is not necessarily to call people out with this project. It'll be a published paper in the next few months. The goal is really just to kind of inform folks who may be, you know, promoting these types of practices that the capabilities are out there to identify that. Yeah, and the goal is not to name anybody by name or to make anybody look bad, and that's been a focus for me as a medical student, to kind of remain neutral in that
we
part.
Need to elevate the profession and also elevate standardization of results and kind of give some quality assurance measures for people who are taking these things at face value. What percentage of images out there on the gram do you think are adjusted or Photoshopped or Facetuned in terms of plastic surgeons posting globally, if you had to guess?
So I'll kind of flip it on you. What do you think that number might be?
A good 30%, maybe even close to 40%, I would say. And I think one of the reasons, like, I always get this comment on my Instagram is, why can't you post more before and after images? Well, I've thought long and hard about it, and I would love to, but the problem with before and afters is people really only post their best results. If I have a before and after that's like, yeah, I see it, but it doesn't show up very well in a photo, am I going to post that? No. So I think it's a self-selection process where you post only your good stuff. And secondly, like, I kind of don't want to attract the patient that's so results driven that they're looking for, like, I've got to have all of these levels of changes in order for my procedure to be a success, because that's a setup for failure. You can't guarantee that. And I think even people who go in for a consultation and they get that computer tuned image, like, this is what your rhinoplasty is going to look like, that's a setup for disappointment. And really, that selects for patients who are not about the doctor-physician relationship. And I'm coming to you because I trust you, and I know you're going to do your best for me, because I do that for every patient. But I absolutely cannot guarantee 100% that you're going to come out looking like this, or you're going to have the exact, precise, beautiful result that that girl got. Because that's not the way surgery works. You have healing as a, you know, you have different individual factors, you have different levels of anatomic complexity. So as a result, I really like video, because you can't really face tune video that easily. And I just post things on the fly so you can see how my hands work, how I care, how I take time. That's what my philosophy
is. I think you do a really good job at that. It's interesting that you mention it. One of the other tools we're kind of interested in is to, you know, develop an algorithm where you can feed in a patient's photo, just kind of a facial image or you know, whatever image it may be preoperatively, and input what procedures they're interested in. And it'll scour through Instagram to identify folks with kind of similar facial structures who've undergone, or who our algorithms think have undergone similar procedures. And, you know, you may end up with an array of hundreds of people with, you know, similar face who've gone through a similar procedure. And it gives you a better idea of, you know, the range of possible results, as opposed to, you know, putting that burden on you to make that promise.
Right. That's a great idea. So artificial intelligence will be able to scan the gazillions of images out there on Google or Google, you know, Google Images, and choose everyone that looks like they had a before and after rhinoplasty for you to choose. You know, if you have a bulbous tip, this is what you can achieve. And then you can see the spectrum of the global results. That's so cool. I think patients would love that.
And it kind of takes takes the ball out of your court sometimes, when you might have to have those difficult conversations about, you know, I understand you want to look this way, but that may not be possible. And it may take away from that, you know, that relationship that you're seeking to have. So if you have this tool that can kind of supplement, you know, your professional opinion, sometimes you can shift the blame towards this tool if you're not necessarily in your comfort zone.
And what's this project that you're working on that detects Facetune in Photoshop and is able to reverse the image to its original? That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so this is an algorithm that was developed, I believe, at UC Berkeley, piloted on images on Flickr, but never really applied to plastic surgery or fine-tuned for use with plastic surgery images. So you'll feed a post-operative image that may have been face-tuned into the algorithm, and it's actually able to reverse engineer what that image looked like prior to being face-tuned or Photoshopped. In cases of real egregious enhancement, you can go back and you'll really see a difference. What I found interesting is that some of these adjustments are so subtle that, you know, we humans may pick them up subconsciously, but are not necessarily aware of them. We couldn't, you know, put our finger on them. So sometimes it's extremely subtle and it's hard to pick up on.
I've noticed a lot of patients coming in during the pandemic, and I think it's related to kind of a Zoom dysmorphia where they see their image in a way they haven't seen it before. And for prolonged periods of time and while talking and emoting, they're looking at their face on Zoom. Talk a little bit about what the front-facing camera of the computer does to your face, or what like selfies do in terms of visual distortion of your face.
So, you know, I'm certainly not an expert in photography, but, you know, just from my own experience trying to put a good face forward in virtual interviews and such, it doesn't do the human face justice. You know, previously we've had to use very sophisticated DSLR cameras and these kinds of things to capture the surgical result properly. And now we're relying on folks, you know, communicating their face through Zoom, and it'll bring in a whole set of new challenges. I think It's an opportunity for us to collect more data. If that's, you know, something that's going to be long lasting, we'll be able to, you know, study it a bit more deeply, but I'm hoping that this is not a lasting change.
Yeah, I think patients maybe are not so aware, and everyone should be aware that when you do your selfie camera, your nose is going to be magnified because of the optics of the photography and the lens, typically. And even when I'm taking before and after pictures, I need to be at least 5 feet away from the patient, because otherwise you get a fish-eyed image where your nose looks bigger and disproportionate to your face. So all the time that's going to happen to you in your selfies. And even on the Zoom camera, it's actually even worse because you can't even position yourself. You have to be a fixed distance in order to be in the square box of your Zoom meeting room. But so I think that has really influenced people coming in, because they're very hypercritical of their own faces. And I think that we just need to learn to be more forgiving of like how the camera portrays us, because really other people don't see us in that static fixed way. They see the dynamic, charismatic personality coming through and emotion. So, I mean, hopefully.
How do you balance that as a surgeon where, you know, the service that's being sought out is what you do for a living? You know, you're in the business of helping people who have kind of these concerns about themselves. You know, where do you draw that line?
That's a good question. I try to definitely look and find the grain of truth in what they're saying. Like, yes, they look a little jowly. They feel a little heavy around their lower face. Can I see that? Yes. If I can anatomically see that and see the volume loss in their face that may be contributing to that and add a little bit of volume and improve that in a meaningful way, then I'll offer it. But if I feel like, oh my God, there's so much jowling and I would have to, you know, put 5 syringes of filler to support that, I'm not going to take someone's money and do that. I'd rather convert them to a surgery patient, or if that's out of their budget, then at least, you know, I still won't waste your filler dollars on something that's not realistic. So I think it's important to see someone who's not financially driven. Like, I'm fortunate to be very busy, and I'm also very ethical, and not everybody out there is. So if you're a patient and you're going into whatever little med spa because you think jawline filler is jawline filler anywhere around town, it's not. And people are financially driven. So that's a really bad part of our specialty where ethics comes into play. And that's where you have to look for integrity, I think. So
I think that'll be super reassuring for a lot of the patients out there listening.
Yeah, I want people to have confidence that, like, I'm not going to give you a syringe because I need the money. I just want you to get the results. And it inevitably leads to an unhappy patient if you are going to just be a salesperson. What do you predict is the future of this year going forward? Do you think that COVID is going to inhibit plastic surgery as we get back to being busy?
I think it's going to push each surgeon to, you know, to really focus on safety. You know, not that COVID is similar to, you know, to previous infections or to previous safety concerns or infectious concerns in surgery, but I really think it's challenging surgeons in private practice, but also in academic settings to put their best foot forward and to make sure they're taking their, crossing their T's and dotting their I's with regards to patient safety. Again, I really am optimistic that it won't be a permanent change, but I think the lessons learned will be useful far into the future.
I think so too. I think COVID definitely put a standstill on a lot of research projects, including some that we have running, because we were just not even sure if we should even embark on these things during this time. But everything is slowly picking up, and vaccinations coming around, and people are coming back in for testing, and we're starting to resume research. Research must continue. Otherwise, you know, we can't stop the progress of society and science. But talk a little bit
Go ahead. I think our space is very interesting because, you know, a lot of the data that's been gathered, you know, can be held virtually. A lot of these analyses can take place based on big data generated online, whereas, you know, more traditional bread and butter research project might require a little bit more in-person interaction. You might need to bring in a research student or somebody to kind of, you know, take care of surveys or, you know, so on and so forth. But I think that this is a really good opportunity to further some of our AI stuff.
Now, you're an Ironman triathlete, is that right? What else are you doing besides exercising a lot to biohack and improve body performance? Besides like running and triathlons.
I got super into martial arts a few years ago. I began practicing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I found that, you know, not only is it a really good way of staying sane, but you get to meet good people. That's kind of been put on hold for the last several months, obviously because of the pandemic. But even then, I think we're finding good ways of kind of getting back to our normal in a safe way. And I've found that martial arts has been a really good outlet for some of the stresses of COVID-19 as well. Obviously I've got my bike right next to me here. So stationary biking has been a really good outlet.
Any supplements that you take as an exercise fanatic and health kick?
No.
You're too young for that at 24. All of 24. Just be yourself.
I've done, I guess, a few of these, you know, protein powders and vitamins here and there, but I'm on a student budget for now.
Well, you're killing it out there in med school. I'm really excited to learn more about your research. I'd love to participate. I'm really interested in all of these topics. But thanks so much for doing this in your spare time during med school, helping to improve artificial intelligence and all of our understanding of images and facial aesthetics. It's awesome.
Thank you so much, Dr. K. I look forward to working with you.
Where can people find you if they're interested to chat with you more about this? On your Instagram?
So I'm widely accessible. Yeah, I'm accessible on Instagram. Instagram is really the future of this stuff. So Chris Schartz 8, CHRISCHARTS, and the number 8. You know, you can DM me. I'm excited to collaborate with new folks in the
Perfect.
Coming weeks.
Amazing. And I hope that this research progresses quickly. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. And you can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DRKAY. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. And there you'll find some non-doctored photos of before and after pictures that are legit. And don't forget to check out my amazing skincare line at Katie Skincare. I would love to send you some skincare products to try for your handsome face. In that cold weather out there, our Deep Blue Hydration Serum is the best hydrator and so good for guys after they shave. So that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to tune in to next time. It's every Tuesday, a longer podcast, and 5-Minute Fridays. And leave us a review, rank, rate, and review the podcast, and screenshot that, email it to us at info@beautybydrk, and we'd love to send you a deluxe size sample of our skincare. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.